This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on, Katie?
Oh, you know, just hanging out in my new office. I moved stuff out of what is soon to be Ashley's room, which was my old office, so I can start getting my autism used to the concept of change.
I love that.
I have started pooping with the doors closed. You're welcome.
I don't care about that, to be honest.
Okay, cool. Some people really do.
Katie, we all had to share like multi-stall bathrooms in high school.
I know. But for some, I've noticed, for some people, they're like, hey, been there, done that. I don't ever want to have to do that again. And for some people, they're like, oh my, it doesn't even faze me.
It doesn't faze me.
Okay, cool. I'll probably keep going just because I should really get used to closing the door when I poop. I do it when Gabe is here, obviously. Yeah. I don't just go to the bathroom with the door open when Gabe is here. I'm not fucking crazy. But yeah, I love my new setup. I'm really happy with it. What else is going on? Procrastinating on my homework. Taylor Swift being in Australia is so much easier for me than Taylor Swift being in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. Even I had a hard time waking up for Tokyo. And you know that's a problem if I can't wake up for it.
I loved getting a live update from my friend over in Australia at 6 a.m. our time. So that was fantastic.
And of course, he got to witness the most incredible live
mashup
secret song that has happened on the Eras tour.
I messaged him after I started seeing clips of it. And I was like, I just need you to know how jealous I am that you got two of my favorite of her songs. And then you also got two more songs mashed up into Getaway Car. Like, I don't even think that you truly understand, and I know that he doesn't, because he had no idea what the surprise songs, even what I was talking about when I was like, please live update me.
Oh my god.
And I was just like, I need you to know how jealous I am that you got to experience this.
Yeah, pretty incredible. And then This Is Me Trying was beautiful, so that was a great way to start my day.
That's my favorite Taylor song. Hits me right in the feelings.
It's gotten me through a lot. I worked on your sweater a little bit more.
Oh! I'm so excited. What?
Yes. The other thing I wanted to text you about was I found a pattern for Daisy headbands. Ren Faire.
Oh!
Yeah, so I'm doing a lot. Things are good. I have found that I still have free time somehow, so I'm getting another job.
I love that for you.
So that's gonna be nice. Yeah, things are good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm coming to you all from the funeral home once again. I have been here all week staying over because my bosses are on a well-deserved vacation.
Yeah.
So I've been in charge, and wow, there's so many things to update, but I want to do it quickly. So I got to work my first few services alone and like run a wake and then a funeral this morning. So that was really exciting, and everything went so smoothly, even though it fucking snowed like a foot overnight last night and I had to wake up at 6 a.m. and start shoveling and get the plow guy here. But things went so well with the funeral, so I feel really good. I'm glad that I can handle that while my bosses take a break that they deserve.
Hell yeah.
And then birthday weekend was fabulous.
So fabulous.
So fucking good. First of all, Katie is the ultimate blanket fort builder.
Absolutely, I am.
Like, what a magical experience.
I'm so glad that you enjoyed it. I'm so glad that I lived up to the reputation that I will not stop talking about.
That you never
stop talking about it. Set for myself. But to be fair, when people who know me think forts, they think Katie. And I just want to make sure that everyone knows that. And I have evidence. I have proof of the multiple forts, picture proof of forts I've been building throughout my life. And I will challenge anyone, listeners, who think that they can build a better fort than I can. Challenge accepted. So.
Challenge accepted. We had an awesome slumber party with everyone. And before that, we had a fantastic fucking time at the Murder Mystery Dinner Theater, which was much more interactive than we thought it was going to be, which like elevated the experience once we got there. And I need everyone to understand that the actors loved us.
Yes. Actually, you know what? That is a really important prerequisite before we describe it, because you're going to hear our behavior and you're going to think that sounds disruptive. But we can promise you that they loved us.
Oh, we were the favorite table. Table three. There are several rooms within this mansion at the Mount Hope Mansion, and it's all decorated as scenes of the play, and each room has a few tables that everybody sat at, and when you get there, you have to go around searching for things in a couple different rooms so you can crack a code, so that was fun. And then you get brought into a room where there's a stage, you get introduced to the characters, all of the suspects get told to leave the room, and then we are left with our two hosts, who are two of the characters who showed up to the party late, so they were not there for the murder of the head of their spy agency. That was actually so fucking funny, walking into that one room and stumbling upon the body on the floor. So that was funny. They break character. They tell us everything that's going to happen throughout the night. It's kind of like working in different acts where you have to go look for a clue somewhere. And if you think you find it, you get them, and then they will take it away, confirm that it's a clue. You all go back to your tables, you sit and eat one of the courses, and they explain the clue to you. That's how it's supposed to go. We, at every moment possible, except for when they were immediately telling us what the clues were up and about, furiously searching this entire fucking place while everyone else was sitting down and eating. And then, like, we'd hear the bell for the clue to be announced in the room that we're supposed to be in, and we would all scurry in after the actors. And at one point, they were like, oh, you're behind us again. And then as we talked about that later on in the night, we were like, so I realized that we were probably so disruptive to everyone else who was sitting there trying to eat their dinners because we weren't supposed to be up searching for clues the entire time.
Yeah, it's definitely not supposed to be walking around as much as we were. In our defense, they did say to be walking around to talk to the characters.
Yeah.
They said to do that.
We leaned in.
If there's anything that we're going to do, it's lean in and double down. So
we had 7 deeply neurodivergent people at a table when we're supposed to be figuring out a murder. We're going to lean in.
Mm-hmm. So part of the cipher that you're like going around to figure out, there's like a key on the table, and we were so sure that we'd be able to figure it out. And at one point, one of the characters was like, no, just wait. And I kept trying. And then she was like, no, like patience is virtue. Like, we'll give you the key. Just stop.
And I have to say, you do have to talk to the characters because, like, you need to suss out the situation. You need to get the gossip. You need to figure out who hates who for what, when, where, why.
They'll lie to you.
And they'll lie to you. They'll be deceptive because they're suspects. Yeah. So you really need to suss it out. And I have to say that I immediately vibed with the femme fatale because we were dressed in the same fucking color dress, all glammed up. And they explicitly told us during the directions to not touch the actors. And when I tell you that immediately, Selkie, codename Selkie, the femme fatale immediately grabbed my hands, and we were like sitting knee to knee talking about our nails. And then at one point we figured out something weird about a dead sister of hers, and she came back. First of all, I was searching every room for her, and then I realized that they were probably backstage while we were all supposed to be eating. So that was another clue to us being way too into it. But she came back out, and I immediately was like, I grabbed her arms.
Yeah, rather than we talked for about 5 minutes as to what was the best way to ask this question, and we came to the conclusion that the best way was to casually mention a sister and emotionally manipulate these actors, which again, they specifically asked us to do.
They told us to.
Be deceptive.
So I grabbed her by the arms and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, with how we look the same, I've always wanted a sister. I feel like we could be sisters. Do you have a sister? And then she sat down with us and told us the tea about her sister. I need you all to know that it... And we figured out... pretty quickly.
Yes. So we were vibing. It also became really clear to me that the actors were like only supposed to go to each table once, but each actor was coming back to our table multiple times. Because we, at one point, were trying to convince them to unionize.
Yes!
we were just, like, asking about family gossip, telling them about inventions from the future. Like, it was so much fun. We had a blast.
Because this was set in, like, what was it, the 60s?
Yes.
It was amazing. We also had an empty seat, so they kept sitting down with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, these people literally love us. And we know that they do, because when we went back into the room with the stage for the interrogations part, where we all got to ask them questions, we're waiting for people to trickle in. They see us in the crowd, and they're like, table three,
yeah,
we love you. And then one of the actors looks at the rest of the crowd and goes, you know, we like you guys, but we don't really love you that much. To everyone else.
Which is great, because when all of the actors were gone, we specifically said, oh my god, thank god they get a lunch break. I hope that they're back there talking shit about everyone here, including us. Because everyone knows that that's the best part about work, is like talking shit about the people that you have to serve. Whether they're great or not, it's just the way it goes. So for them to all be like, hey, table three, in a full crowded room, I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Great. Excellent.
It was just such great vibes for my birthday. I was like, this couldn't have gone any better. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the food was bomb.
Oh my god. That was the best, like, vegan, gluten-free meal I've ever had in my fucking life.
Yes! So good. So I don't want to give too much more away, but everybody should definitely go to Murder at Mount Hope Mansion, because that shit is so incredible.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to go back like next month.
Yes, I want to. Yes, because they do change up bits of the storylines and the characters and stuff, which we found out from one of the actors' moms while I was behind her in line in the bathroom. So
yep.
I think that's about it. I wanted to keep this shorter, but like, we needed to tell everybody.
Yeah. Of course.
But we should definitely get into the episode.
Let's do it.
As we are all most likely aware by now, there are several genocides, war crimes, and crimes against humanity happening across the globe. Russia's onslaught against Ukraine, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from their ancestral lands by Israel, the decades-long humanitarian crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo, the political war in Sudan, and many more. We see many examples of crimes against humanity every day through our phone screens. We haven't always had such access to seeing the perils of war firsthand, but for quite some time now, we have had a list of designated crimes against humanity. Today, I want to talk about how this list came to be and what constitutes a crime against humanity. Also, side note, this is a re-record episode. I did do a crimes against humanity episode before. It was a little bit different than this, but I am excited to do this re-record today.
I am also really glad you're doing this. This is so important, especially with everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm. So let's start with a quick history of how crimes against humanity came to have legal precedence. The context of how the term itself was first developed is a little bit of a mystery. There are some scholars who say the term was used as early as the late 18th century and early 19th century. At the time, the context of it was connected to slavery and the slave trade, particularly related to European colonialism of Africa. There are some who believe it was actually first connected to a declaration made by France, Great Britain, and Russia in 1915, in which those countries condemned the mass killing of Armenians in the Ottoman Empire. We also have the use of crimes against humanity in a treaty in the 1945 Nuremberg Charter at the end of World War II. Throughout time, crimes against humanity have evolved under international law and through court systems such as the International Criminal Court, the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia in 1993, and the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda in 1994. Many countries have also taken it upon themselves to criminalize crimes against humanity in their laws and courts, but some still need to get on board. With that being said, Internationally, crimes against humanity have not been codified in a dedicated treaty, unlike genocide and war crimes. There has been a push for that to happen, but no such luck yet. Also, unlike war crimes, crimes against humanity can be committed during times of peace, and again, unlike genocide, they are not necessarily committed against specific ethnic, racial, national, or religious groups.
What I'm hearing is, it doesn't like specifically have to be against one ethnic group to be considered a crime against humanity.
Yes.
The way that some other laws would require someone to like legally prove it's against a like protected group of people.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. While we're on the subject of genocide and war crimes, I do want to give a quick definition of the legal differences between these, which might also help answer your question.
Word.
So with war crimes, those include torture, mutilation, corporal punishment, hostage taking, and acts of terrorism. This category also covers violations of human dignity, such as rape and forced prostitution, looting, and execution without trial. War crimes, unlike crimes against humanity, are always committed in times of war, hence the name. Genocide. This includes all acts committed with the intent to destroy a national, ethnic, or religious group. And then crimes against humanity. Attacks committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack directed against any civilian population, such as murder, deportation, torture, and rape. The International Criminal Court prosecutes the perpetrators even if the crimes were not committed in times of war. Does that help answer your question a little bit?
Yes, it does.
I'm glad that you asked that right before I went into that. It was pretty perfect. It's almost like I told you to.
Yeah, it is. And I was also just kind of like listening to what you're saying. Makes me think of this. I can't remember what it was called, but we learned about it in my logic class that I had to take for philosophy. And it was talking about how, I think it's like necessary and sufficient. Yes, that is what it is. It's the idea that like one word encompasses another concept, but that other concept doesn't encompass that other word.
Okay, yes, got it.
And that's like kind of going on here with crimes against humanity and genocide and stuff like that. So it's interesting to see it all kind of like laid out like that.
Yeah. The International Criminal Court was established through the 1998 Rome Statute. This is the statute that reflects the consensus amongst the international community on the matters of crimes against humanity and has been the most expansive list of what constitutes as a crime against humanity. So let's dive into what the 1998 Rome Statute consists of. And this is coming from the UN. In Article 7 for crimes against humanity, number one, for the purpose of this is going to be like such dry legal phrasing, and I'm so sorry.
Jargon.
Yeah, jargon. For the purpose of this statute, crimes against humanity means any of the following acts when committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack directed against any civilian population with knowledge of the attack: murder, extermination, enslavement, deportation, or forcible transfer of population, imprisonment, or other severe deprivation of physical liberty in violation of fundamental rules of international law, torture, rape, sexual slavery, enforced prostitution, forced pregnancy, enforced sterilization, or any other form of sexual violence of comparable gravity. Persecution against any identifiable group or collectivity on political, racial, national, ethnic, cultural, religious, gender as defined in paragraph 3, or other grounds that are universally recognized as impermissible under international law in connection with any act referred to in this paragraph or any crime within the jurisdiction of the court. Enforced disappearance of persons, the crime of apartheid, other inhumane acts of a similar character, intentionally causing great suffering or serious injury to body or to mental or physical health. I just want to pause before I go into the next part of it. I put emphasis on quite a few of those, and I really know that you know why I did. Yeah. And I'm sure listeners can pick up on that, because some of these things that I am describing, we are literally watching happen every single day to multiple groups of people in different areas. And it's just like, it's just insane to me that it's just being allowed to happen. for the purpose of paragraph one that I just read, attack directed against any civilian population means a course of conduct involving the multiple commission of acts referred to in paragraph one against any civilian population pursuant to or in furtherance of a state or organizational policy to commit such act.
That is some real jargon.
It's pretty much just laying out the definitions of things that are within that first paragraph. And then I also have a few more statements from the UN about specifically like what certain things mean in it. According to Article 7 of the Rome Statute, crimes against humanity do not need to be linked to an armed conflict and can also occur in peacetime, similar to the crime of genocide. That same article provides a definition of the crime that contains the following main elements. 1. A physical element, which includes the commission of any of the following acts: murder, extermination, enslavement, deportation or forcible transfer of population, imprisonment, torture, grave forms of sexual violence, persecution, enforced disappearance of persons, the crime of apartheid, or other inhumane acts. A contextual element, quote, when committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack directed against any civilian population, and 3, a mental element with knowledge of the attack. So that's kind of how they break everything down.
One of the things that I love about law and also philosophy is that they define all of their words like right at the beginning like this. My philosophy professor, one of them, and my advisor was also a practicing lawyer who did court all the time. And it's like, it's the best. It made me so annoying because a lot of times people will say something and I'm like, well, what do you mean by this word? Like, I need you to define it for me before we debate this.
When it's talking about the legality of crimes against people, it's very, very good idea to be thorough.
You have to be, because if you don't include all of this stuff, then you just have loopholes that you can't charge people for committing crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
I know it's like a card game, like, haha, and we've like a little bit lost the importance of that term because it's been brought into popular culture. But when you really break it down, it is the worst things that people can do to other people.
Mm-hmm. So the contextual element determines that crimes against humanity involve either large-scale violence in relation to the number of victims or its extension over a broad geographic area, widespread, or a methodical type of violence, systematic. This excludes random, accidental, or isolated acts of violence. Another important distinction is that in the case of crimes against humanity, it is not necessary to prove that there is an overall specific intent. It suffices for there to be a simple intent to commit any of the acts listed, with the exception of the act of persecution, which requires additional discriminatory intent.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Makes it a little bit easier to prosecute them.
Yeah. Is there more to this about intent?
The perpetrator must also act with knowledge of the attack against the civilian population and that his or her action is part of that attack.
Okay. That is really important because taking out the legal requirement to prove intent really wipes away any plea of insanity, which is really interesting. That last part kind of ties it in. And is like, okay, well, if someone is like really insane, that they'll if someone is actually mentally ill and somehow in their blackout commits a crime against humanity, that will kind of catch them. But that's very fascinating.
Yeah, this is why words are important.
Words are so fucking important. This was written by an autistic bitch and I love them for it.
The Rome Statute grants the International Criminal Court with jurisdiction over crimes against humanity, war crimes, genocide, and crimes of aggression. Crimes of aggression only came under their jurisdiction in July of 2018. I'm sure there has been many of us who have recently been like, what the fuck? Why isn't anyone in the international community doing anything to stop the horrors or prosecute anyone? So the next thing I'm going to do is talk about how the ICC actually works, but I can see that Katie has something she wants to say. Go ahead.
Was that brought on by anything specific? Or were people just like, I guess it makes sense? because this sort of thing just kind of happened with stalking. And I was recently telling Ashley that I have been trying to better understand and treat the horrible crime of stalking with the correct words. I don't want to say the respect it deserves, but like the acknowledgement that it truly deserves. And a lot of times stalking is sort of added on at end to something. Mm-hmm. So it's like domestic abuse and domestic violence and stalking. Or something like that. So I was just curious if they got lumped in with that or if they were like, whoa, we need to uplift.
There is an answer to that. The definition of this crime was adopted through amending the Rome Statute at the first review conference of the statute in Kampala, Uganda in 2010. So they had like a review moment and they were like, okay, we should add this.
Okay, cool. I love a self-reflective committee.
Right. The International Criminal Court, or the ICC as I'm going to call it from now on because that's a mouthful, conveniently has an example of the flow of an investigation after a crime has occurred. So the rest of my written notes are really just going to be the exact wording from the ICC because, as we said, words matter when it comes to communicating how an international criminal court works. Oh, and just so everyone knows, the ICC is not technically part of the UN, but they do have a working relationship with each other and they rely on each other.
Can you give me a metaphor of what that reliance kind of looks like? Can you put that in terms I might understand?
Funeral home working with church to bring the same event together, but they're two separate entities.
Perfect. That is exactly what I was looking for because I was like thinking about it as the way that the police work together with the lawyers of the city to try and like put someone behind bars. Mm-hmm. And like they are kind of two separate entities, but they really work together, yeah. You know? But it's more, it's... Mm-hmm. Okay. Church, perfect. That's exactly what, awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. First step is the preliminary examinations. The Office of the Prosecutor must determine whether there is sufficient evidence of crimes of sufficient gravity falling within the ICC's jurisdiction, whether there are genuine national proceedings, and whether opening an investigation would serve the interests of justice and the victims. Side note, if the requirements are not met for initiating an investigation, or if the situation or crimes are not under the ICC's jurisdiction, the ICC's prosecution cannot investigate. Number two, investigations. After gathering evidence and identifying a suspect, the prosecution requests ICC judges to issue, one, an arrest warrant. The ICC relies on countries to make arrests and transfer suspects to the ICC, or two, a summons to appear. Suspects appear voluntarily. If not, an arrest warrant may be issued. I have another side note on that. If the requirements are not met for initiating an investigation, or if the situation or crimes are not under the ICC's jurisdiction, the ICC's prosecution cannot investigate. The prosecution may seek again the confirmation of charges by presenting new evidence.
Okay, that makes sense. It does still feel a little bit like they're a little more boxed in than I want them to be. Mm,
yeah, which I think is a feeling that you're going to carry with you throughout this. The next step is the pre-trial stage. Initial appearance. Three pre-trial judges confirm suspect's identity and ensure suspect understands the charges. Normal. Okay. And then next, confirmation of charges hearings. After hearing the prosecution, the defense, and the legal representative of victims, the judges decide, usually within 60 days, if there is enough evidence for the case to go to trial. Again, normal. Another caveat. If the suspect is not arrested or does not appear, legal submissions can be made, but hearings cannot begin.
That kind of started not with crimes against humanity, but in the U.S. court system, mm-hmm. with David Miscavige, when they were like, they kept issuing subpoenas and they're like, hey, buddy, you got a gum. The hearing, it can't start without you. And after a certain point, the judge was like, that's it. You've been told we're continuing. We're not just gonna wait any longer. Show up or fucking don't, but you've been told.
You've been told. Oh, Scientology. Trial stage. Before three trial judges, the prosecution must prove beyond reasonable doubt the guilt of the accused. Totally normal. Judges consider all evidence, then issue a verdict, and when there is a verdict of guilt, issue a sentence. The judges can sentence a person up to 30 years of imprisonment and, under exceptional circumstances, a life sentence. Verdicts are subject to appeal by the defense and by the prosecutor. Okay, totally normal. Judges can also order reparations for the victims. Again, totally normal thing. If there is not enough evidence, the case is closed and the accused is released. And acquittals are subject to appeal by the defense and by the prosecutor.
Can we go back? How much time are they allowed to give them?
30 years and, in exceptional circumstances, a life sentence.
For crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
Okay. There's people in jail for life for weed, but okay.
Right? I know. I know. I told you, carry the disappointment feeling with you.
I was like, oh, she must have said that wrong. Like, not to be like, throw them in fucking jail, like, but they're committing crimes against humanity.
The appeal stage. Both the prosecutor and the defense have the right to appeal a trial chamber's decision on the verdict, decision on guilt or innocence of the accused, and the sentence. The victims and the convicted person may appeal an order for reparations. An appeal is decided by 5 judges of the appeals chamber, who are never the same judges as those who gave the original verdict. Do love that. The appeals chamber decides whether to uphold the appealed decision, amend it, or reverse it. This is thus the final judgment, unless the appeals chamber orders a retrial before the trial chamber. Enforcement of sentence. Sentences are served in countries that have agreed to enforce ICC sentences. If a verdict of guilt is not upheld, the person may be released. So that is how the actual, like, beginning to end of trial process happens.
Okay.
So the ICC itself is located in The Hague, which is a city on the west coast of the Netherlands facing the North Sea, although they do have ICC offices in several countries where investigations do occur. The ICC is intended to complement, not to replace, national criminal systems. It prosecutes cases only when states are unwilling or unable to do so genuinely. As a judicial institution, the ICC does not have its own police force or enforcement body. Thus, it relies on cooperation with countries worldwide for support, particularly for making arrests, transferring arrested persons to the ICC detention center in The Hague, freezing suspects' assets, and enforcing sentences. So they're really relying on outside sources to make sure that, like, things are actually moving and being handled and sentences are being fulfilled, which is just, like, a little bit terrifying when we're talking about literal crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
While not a United Nations organization, the court has a cooperation agreement with the United Nations. When a situation is not within the court's jurisdiction, the United Nations Security Council can refer the situation to the ICC, granting it jurisdiction. This has been done in situations in Darfur and Libya. The ICC actively works to build understanding and cooperation in all regions, for example, through seminars and conferences worldwide. The court cooperates with both state parties and non-states parties. The court works in particularly close cooperation with its host state, the Netherlands, regarding practical matters such as constructing the court's new permanent buildings, transferring suspects to the ICC detention center, facilitating their appearances before the court, and many other matters. Countries and other entities, including civil society groups such as NGOs, also cooperate with the court in numerous ways, such as raising awareness of and building support for the court in its mandate. The court seeks to increase this ongoing cooperation through such means as seminars and conferences. So they're, like, really just trying to do a lot of outreach to be like, hi, you should definitely follow our rules for, like, not harming humans.
Please, guys. Don't harm humans. Look, we made some rules about it.
Oh, no.
Do you want to listen?
Do you want to hear them all? The Rome Statute established 3 separate bodies: the Assembly of States Parties, the International Criminal Court, which comprises of 4 separate organs, and the Trust Fund for Victims. And I want to list off 10 key things that they have on their website to know about the ICC. The ICC does not prosecute those under the age of 18 when a crime was committed. Before the prosecutor can investigate, she must conduct a preliminary examination considering such matters as sufficient evidence, jurisdiction, gravity, complementarity, and the interests of justice. When investigating, the prosecutor must collect and disclose both incriminating and exonerating evidence. The defendant is considered innocent until proven guilty. The burden of proof lies with the prosecutor. Okay. During all stages of proceedings, pretrial, trial, and appeals, the defendant has the right to information in a language he or she fully understands. Thus, the ICC proceedings are conducted in multiple languages with teams of interpreters and translators at work. Pre-trial judges issue warrants of arrest and ensure there is enough evidence before a case can go to trial. Before a case is committed to trial, during the pre-trial phase, the defendant is referred to as a suspect. Once the case is committed to trial, since at that point the charges have been confirmed, the defendant is referred to as the accused, because words matter. Trial judges hear the evidence from the prosecutor, defense, and the victim's lawyers, render a verdict, and if a person is found guilty, the sentence and decision on reparations. Appeals judges render decisions on appeals from the prosecutor or defense. If a case is closed without a verdict of guilt, it can be reopened if the prosecutor presents new evidence. Okay. The ICC detention center is used to hold in safe, secure, and humane custody those detained by the ICC. It is not used for enforcing sentences. Convicted persons serve sentences in one of the state's parties, which have concluded agreements on enforcement of sentences with the ICC and have accepted to place a particular convicted person or persons within a national facility.
When you say humane, do you mean like Netherlands humane or America humane?
Oh no, Netherlands humane, because the detention center is in the Netherlands.
Okay, just needed to check. America does fucked up shit everywhere else. Like, America will American humane people in other countries all the fucking time.
Thankfully, America does not have control of this system, so...
Word.
Yeah. Until such an arrangement is made, a convicted person remains temporarily in the detention center. The court endeavors to ensure the mental, physical, and spiritual welfare of those in the detention center. Detainees have access to fresh air, recreational time, sports activities, library books, news, computers for preparing their cases, quality food, and facilities for cooking. Detainees are entitled to privacy with defense lawyers, to privileged communication with a consular or diplomatic representative, to visit a minister or spiritual advisor, and to visit with family, including a spouse or partner. So very much giving the vibes of the Netherlands and their jail systems.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Treated way better than prisoners in America.
Oh boy, yeah. The International Committee of the Red Cross, the ICRC, is the detention center's inspecting authority and as such has unrestricted access to examine, on unannounced visits, the treatment of the detained persons. Their living conditions and their physical and psychological conditions, in conformity with widely accepted international standards governing the treatment of persons deprived of liberty. No visits to the detention center are granted to the media or the general public.
That makes sense.
Right? I think that's smart.
Makes total sense.
I do want to touch on the Trust Fund for Victims before we close out the episode. To quote the ICC, though the Trust Fund for Victims is separate from the court, it was created in 2004 by the Assembly of States Parties in accordance with Article 79 of the Rome Statute. The fund's mission is to support and implement programs that address harms resulting from genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. To achieve this mission, the TFV has a twofold mandate. One, to implement court-ordered reparations, and two, to provide physical, psychological, and material support to victims and their families. By assisting victims to return to a dignified and contributory life within their communities, the TFV contributes to realizing sustainable and long-lasting peace by promoting restorative justice and reconciliation. End quote.
Damn. Yeah.
And that is our episode on crimes against humanity.
Hell yeah. That was phenomenal.
Thank you. I definitely think it's a fucking poignant episode. So just kind of wanted to bring all of that information out there so that everyone can understand exactly what falls under that umbrella and how things are prosecuted.
Yeah, it's really important with everything that's going on right now.
Absolutely. And with that, we will see y'all next week.
Yes, we will.
Bye.
Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.